Chapter 6, Systems Revealed, Systems Managed. A person needs new experiences. They jar something deep inside, allowing him to grow. Without change, something sleeps inside us and seldom awakens. The sleeper must awake. Duke Leto Atreides, from the movie Dune, Universal, 1984. Note to the reader. This chapter and the next have a meditative quality. You must ingrain the work the system method. So in an attempt to get you there, I present these two chapters in a repetitive, almost hypnotic tone. I thoroughly describe the core of the mindset while adding some new elements. Converging chains. Your day can be calm, predictable, and under control. Chronic shortages of time and money, gun-to-the-head decision-making, and dealing with less-than-amusing people can be history. Order and calm can replace anxiety. Starting with a subtle shift of perspective, elimination of chaos is possible. This is about a simple mindset change that will cause subsequent modification in how you handle the subsystems that make up the system of systems that is you. The pathway to control, to eliminating chaos, is to discover, examine, optimize, and then manage your mechanical and biological systems. The dictionary's definition of system is a group of interacting, interrelated, or interdependent elements forming a complex whole. That's perfect. In every aspect of your being, systems are wall to wall. In linear 1-2-3 sequences, they are embedded everywhere, operating all the time. You wake, study, read, exercise, and eat. You breathe, walk, and digest. You go to work, talk to friends, drive to the store to pick up groceries for dinner. You put gas in the car. You earn money and put it in the bank. Later, you pay the bills. Silent and invisible, your systems work without pause. Sometimes they work alone, but often they work together. They support and complement each other, and sometimes they fight each other. These processes, these systems, are most often recurring, not one-time events. And you can make improvements in many of your systems, manhandling them into efficiency, pointing them in the directions you want them to point, producing the results you want them to produce. As you examine the systems of your life, investigating your way down through the multiplying, expanding, and intertwining root-like chains, you see that subsystems compose each system, and each subsystem is composed of sub-subsystems. Turn things around and work your way back up to the top of the converging chains. As they come together and thicken into a single trunk, see that they add up to the primary system that is you. You are a system of systems. The essence of your work, health, and relationships lies within systems. And although veiled behind the buzz of everyday consciousness, there is nothing magical or esoteric about them, or about their management. You will see life for what it is, a collection of individual linear systems. Then, in this clarity, you will extract and perfect these systems one by one before reinserting each back into your life. The huge and wonderful irony of these machinations is that peace and prosperity silently enter through the side door. Nearing your epiphany. Grasp that each of the countless systems of your world is linear, a process. Like computer program code, they execute their systems in sequence. I'll say it again. More often than not, the systems are recurring. They happen over and over again. This is important, and notwithstanding a physicist's space-time theoretical objections, a system doesn't execute randomly. It operates in a simple, predictable, 1-2-3 step-by-step progression. Ruthless and relentless, it proceeds the same way every single time unless a component is adjusted, removed, or inserted. Right now, slow things down for yourself. Find a place where you won't be distracted. Visualize each of the following systems, focusing on their 1-2-3 step sequences. Start with a closed set of sequential actions for driving a car from point A to point B. Open the car door, get in, put the seatbelt on, insert the key in the ignition, turn the key to start the engine, etc. Describe the specific linear steps, both mechanical and human, involved in finding a potential customer, making a presentation, and closing a sale. Consider the process of interviewing and hiring a new employee, and then keeping this person for the long term while maximizing his or her contribution. Think about nurturing a relationship with a spouse, coping with terminal illness, or giving birth. Then there are the mundane processes of preparing a financial report, writing a paper for a college course, raking the yard, or doing the wash. Go back to the miraculous human body system that propels you through this world with its countless individual biological and mechanical subsystems, nearly all of which function without any overt guidance, but many of which are under your control to enhance or to abuse. Use your imagination and see uncountable system sequences in motion, most going unnoticed, unless there is this deliberate observation. You see that some sequences don't matter too much, but others have an enormous effect on your happiness and the happiness of those around you. Yes, systems and subsystems intertwine and affect each other, yet first they are separate entities. Although most of your life systems are automatic, there are many you perform consciously. Focusing on these systems that are under your conscious direction, you'll see that tweaking each to a higher efficiency is nearly always possible. You can add brand new systems too, others you'll discard. The Work the System methodology itself is a system. It's the controlling management tool used to analyze and maintain your personal systems. It's the master control mechanism for organizing yourself into an efficient life, a life of serenity, prosperity, and contribution. System management. Each of your personal systems has direction and thrust. Each is headed somewhere, attempting to accomplish something. Systems and subsystems are channeled by genetically determined patterns, learned formulas, cultural codes, bias based on race and gender, humanitarian predilections, simple self-interest, and of course the standard physical predispositions for appetite, sleep, sex, and survival. And all of them are propelled by a mysterious force that many of us choose to call God. So each of us is a system of systems. But here's the rub. Some of our personal systems, each of which, always remember, can be visualized as a distinct entity, are headed in oblique directions, confusing our efforts to reach our conscious goals. At best, a system combines efforts with other systems to help us reach desired targets. At worst, an errant component within a system creates problems that manifest themselves chaotically, chronically, and often subversively, contributing to the feeling that one is not in proper control of one's life. That out-of-control feeling is not rare. Many people are not in control of their lives, especially if the definition of control includes the qualifier, "I am getting what I want in my life." The system of systems view of things sounds complicated, but the complexity of life doesn't leave you helpless to gain control of things because, one at a time, you can take action on specific system components that you draw out of the complexity. This is management in its most elemental form, and the beautiful thing is that neither the sheer complexity of it all nor your propensity to lean in certain directions will stop you from improving the mechanical human systems that turn the wheels of your life. You can list a multitude of individual systems that are necessary for just getting through the day, not to mention running a business, holding a job, coping with college, raising children, making retirement vibrant and meaningful, or just staying level-headed while balancing a household, negotiating with family members, and providing an income. I was a single parent for 15 years, and don't argue with me. This role is the supreme test of a human's ability to simultaneously kill fires, build something for the future, and stay sane. In our culture, it is common to call the management of the day's myriad events multitasking or polyphasic activity. These are flawed expressions because they suggest the performance of multiple simultaneous tasks is some kind of laudable accomplishment. Per the Work the System method, the term system management is what we're after, the term to replace multitasking. System management describes a thought-out orchestration, a demonstration of moment-to-moment control in which one has a firm grip on details and is not living at the edge of crisis, floating along on hope, fingers crossed, prayers recited, and obsessions indulged. The focus must be on the proactive management of systems, not on coping with random system results. If the majority of time is spent examining and tweaking systems to perfection, great results will materialize. Conversely, think about holistic solutions that cover life's complexity like a blanket. Another market for the product, a better manager for the company, a larger house, a new boss, a new spouse. These are attempts to straighten things out all at once, and although obviously applicable in some situations, are opposite of the continuous system improvement efforts I am proposing here. Stop looking for a sudden hand of God solution to problems. Drop the idea that life is convoluted and mysterious. Strip away the complexity and get to work repairing the underlying inefficient mechanisms one by one. Trying to find peace and personal control through drugs, food, work, money, esoteric psychobabble, fanatical adherence to religious or political dogma, running away, or excessive preoccupation with the external, obsession, is an abomination of the simplicity of it all. These blanket applications falsely promise to soothe life's complexities in one fell swoop. Instead, the work the system methodology goes inside and fixes building block components one at a time. It's about making small mechanical system improvements rather than being swallowed up by the promise of some cure-all that only masks chronic internal inefficiency. Let's set aside the complexity and find a way to manage the mechanics of the systems that are right in front of us. The first steps you'll take include setting direction and deciding on strategy. You will begin this process by creating the strategic objective and the general operating principles. These documents are fully explained in Chapter 10. Again, the subversive holistic thought process. According to the American Heritage Dictionary, there are two definitions of holistic. First, emphasizing the importance of the whole and the interdependence of its parts. Second, concerned with wholes rather than analysis or separation into parts. Clearly, the work the system methodology is the antithesis of the second definition. Yet the results of the methodology are in exact accordance with the first definition. In the last 30 years, the terms holistic and global have inserted themselves into the fabric of our culture, supposing, if we do this over here, it will have consequences over there, so let's not do anything. Or, the entire system is faulty, so let's entirely replace it, etc. These generalizations create a paralysis in which we don't take any action at all. Or we identify a problematic primary system, assume the entire primary system is faulty, and then try to force an overall replacement, without first examining the subsystem components. Too often we go after a holistic, bumper sticker solution when it would be more sensible to simply examine the primary system's context and fix a faulty component. From the start, the overall primary system is probably better than okay, working well in most situations. Could we apply a minor internal adjustment to bring things closer to perfection instead of disrupting or replacing the entire system? System improvement and working procedures. If you are like most people, you do not consciously consider the involvement of systems in your daily life. Therefore, you have not consciously thought in terms of adjusting systems in order to eliminate problems from occurring in the first place. For most people, whacking emerging moles is the only option considered. There is no thought of burrowing deep into the mole hole for some serious mole extermination. The little moles are cute-faced decoys that distract us from the critical moves we should be making. I say, let's burrow deep inside their tunnels and eradicate them all. And then before we leave, let's do some serious adjusting. Let's do what we have to do so no more moles show up later. Then, confident that moles will never distract us again, we'll climb back above ground and start fixing the other systems of our lives that need fixing. Here is a mechanical truth of how the world works. One can compensate for the negative outcome of a recurring problem, but without repairing the errant system that caused the problem will undoubtedly occur again. Few people understand the systems management approach of successful managers who intuitively grasp that a seemingly isolated problem is not isolated at all. These leaders see problems as the result of a flaw in an errant system they can fix. For these pace setters, more often from the corporate world than from government, a problem is not a disappointment just to be corrected and then written off. It's a wake-up call. This means that once the manager corrects the immediate negative effects, there is a second step. It is this second step that is the key. The problem's cause is traced to the errant subsystem, which is then modified so that the problem doesn't happen again. So, through the astute leader's observation, a problem calls for a subsystem modification. The leader makes the permanent improvement, causing the entire system to be incrementally more robust and reliable than before the problem occurred. Addressing the problem and then taking the second step to fix the cause of the problem distinguishes the people who are in control from the people who are not in control, the successful from the unsuccessful. The improvement of a system is a system improvement, and the documentation of that system improvement is called a working procedure. The documentation of each improved system is critical. Making a system improvement without it guarantees that the improved system will revert to an inefficient unpredictability born of shortcuts, outdated but comfortable methodologies, the pressures of the day, and/or confusion infused by assorted personalities and talents. Documentation gives permanence to your system improvements. It has to happen. Again, by focusing on repairing problems in this way, the primary system becomes ever more efficient. Over time, rough edges dissolve. It's a beautiful thing, the system improvement process, because as time passes, things improve. Imagine a system that improves with time rather than wears out. At the start, these one-on-one system improvements can seem daunting. You work at them for a while and then ask, when will the problems cease and when can I stop fixing and documenting things? But you carry on despite the demanding work ahead. After plugging along for a while, you notice the pace and quantity of incoming problems decrease. You see fire killings aren't coming so fast, and this is the point where a powerful belief takes hold. With fervor, you accelerate the system improvement working procedure process so even fewer errors occur, and your organization and personal life become smooth and efficient. The bottom line improves while personal vitality increases. Things come under control. You'll never go back. Permanence. As the work the system methodology is applied, your focus is on fixing one system after another, not careening through the day randomly taking care of whatever problems erupt. Your job is not to be a fire killer. Your job is to prevent fires. Of course, in daily life you will always encounter fire killing, but the idea is to minimize it. Ripples and heavy seas. For Centratel, the system improvement process continues 10 years after the implementation of the work the system method. Now, problems are so few that when one surfaces, my staff pounce on it with a vengeance. It is hard to describe the satisfaction of leading a company that operates this way. Like the business, my personal life still has its occasional unexpected ups and downs. That's life. But now it is enormously more resilient, and I am well prepared to absorb unexpected blows. For the Apple vendor, an overturned Apple cart is a disaster. But an apple falling off the side of the cart now and then is a small, easily managed occurrence. There is no getting away from random problems that are caused by an unexpected circumstance or simple, unpredictable human error. That's life. The good news is that in organizations and in personal lives, outright mistakes and random errors account for only a small percentage of total errors. Most problems stem from non-existent system management and show themselves as errors of omission. The further good news is that the work the system method dramatically reduces this form of inefficiency. Errors of omission are addressed in Part 3. What about the unexpected heavy seas of a debilitating injury or the loss of a loved one? Here it is again. Strength and resilience are byproducts of the work the system method. A life that is stronger and more resilient will be better able to navigate the inevitable dark waters. Tweaking. Once the one-time repair of errant systems is complete, the system manager focuses on routine reviews of the entire collection of systems. Per the work the system method, an important aspect of everyday life is to examine established systems on a regular basis and to make system improvements as required. This ongoing review process keeps life smooth over the long term. With the work the system method, the percentage of time and effort expended fixing systems decreases with time, while the percentage of time and effort expended on improving systems, what I call tweaking, increases with time. Since much of the recaptured time and energy is reinvested in refining more subsystems, the primary system becomes ever more efficient and powerful. This is the cycle of increasing returns. Noticing poor system management. When you get a feel for system management in your daily life, you will notice when it isn't happening around you. As you interact with the world, you'll find yourself critiquing what works and what doesn't. Aware of not only your personal systems and their quality of execution, but also of the systems others manage. This new posture as an informal service quality observer will go with you everywhere. Once you get the system's perspective, you will see fire killing all around you. You will understand the real reasons why people who promise to call don't call. Why there is lousy service in certain restaurants, retail stores, and hotels. Why there is haphazard communication with a service provider. You will develop a knack for instantly recognizing shoddy workmanship, missed deadlines, promises not kept, bad attitudes, and sloppy execution. These dysfunctional human performances are the logical end result of poor system management, both organizational and personal. Human dysfunction is pervasive. You can't miss it. The better you get at system management, the more you will notice these inefficiencies. But when you encounter efficiency and calm in a business, an organization, or another individual, you will notice that too, and you will recognize it as the beautiful thing it is. What is the most important difference between the manager of a large successful business and the manager of a small struggling business? The first manages systems, the second copes with bad results. When you're at the receiving end of poor service, remember that the ultimate problem is not with the person who is facing you, who may indeed be rude or uncaring, but with the individual at the top of the organization who is not managing properly. Even so, be sympathetic with the absent leader. Most people don't understand the system improvement process, or even that there is such a thing. With best intentions and working hard, they muddle along, batting off the fastballs as they come hurtling in from all directions. I was like that. What about selfish people? Yes, some are ready to circumvent the rules as they ignore common expectations and don't consider others. But be careful here, too. Don't confuse someone's personality flaw with a mechanical problem, which is a simple lack of attention to the details of personal relationship systems. How one goes about cultivating good relationships is also a system, and the methodology must be set up with care and executed with consistency. For thoughtless people, the base problem is not a personality flaw, but the lack of a functional relationship maintenance system. This is a vicious circle. These people do not return calls, remember birthdays, send thank you notes, or extend invitations. They don't show the least interest in the vicissitudes of the people around them. The consequence is that they receive little positive attention in return. These lonely people feel rejected and alienated, and they reflect that rejection and alienation, digging themselves deeper and deeper into loneliness. Is it their fault? Well, yes, it is. But it's not about a bad person. It's about the absence of system management. It sounds antiseptic, but it's the reality. Some people don't apply the system fundamentals necessary to make and keep friends. Maybe they don't care enough, or, more probably, they just don't get it. Despite the near perfection of our mechanical world, look around you right now and notice that the human qualities of dependability and consistency are in short supply. And because they are in short supply, people accept that condition as normal. Actually, people should accept it as normal. It is normal. And happily for you, that means standing out from the crowd won't take much effort. Once work the system protocols are functional in your life, the people around you will start to notice your quick execution of detail, your consistent reliability, and the congruency between what you say and what you do, and especially your calm, confident comportment. New customers, great employees, and reliable friends will be attracted to you because you doggedly adhere to the simple system management tenets for cultivating great personal and business relationships. People can depend on you. Your life, problematic or orderly? So, bottom line, how do you perceive your life? Do you see it as problematic, unfair, unpredictable, and inhospitable? Or do you view it as orderly and in control, ready to do your bidding? Yet again, this isn't a matter of having a positive or a negative attitude or adopting some philosophical stance based on esoteric theory. This is about simplicity, mechanics, and logic. How do you see things? Illustration: a certain billionaire. We were on vacation in Siena, Italy. We'd been there just a few days, and at night the jet lag had me either entertaining strange dreams or lying awake. This particular night, it was both. An interesting midnight dream inspired this 2 a.m. writing session. In the vivid dream, a well-known multi-billionaire asked me to take the equivalent of the chief operations officer position for his conglomeration of international corporations. Upon receiving the offer in his tycoon's ad hoc boardroom located on the tarmac of an airport somewhere, my central dream thought as I faced him was I would succeed. I would succeed despite my small-town heritage, my lack of an advanced educational degree, and the shortage of other seemingly necessary background requisites. My challenges would be prosaic, limited to dealing with frequent travel, the certain inevitable corporate personality clashes, and whether or not being a part of the enterprise would cause me to feel trapped in a cage. My current world is much smaller, but at least I call the shots. In my dream, why was I confident? It was because my position would entail dealing with the same simple mechanical realities of cause and effect that I deal with now, just on a larger scale. I would work my systems in this enormous corporate structure where, metaphorically speaking, 1 + 1 would continue to equal 2, just like everywhere else. Other than the scale of the endeavor, my tasks would be no different from the tasks I accomplish now. Do you think you would be confident if you had a similar dream? Why or why not? Can you scale up your present work into something with a larger impact? From a strictly mechanical standpoint, what is the next logical level of advancement in a key part of your life?